My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. We hope you'll stay tuned. And joining us on the line is Danny Alexander, Associate Editor of Rock and Rap Confidential. Danny, thank you for joining us on the program today.
Thank you.
Well, we appreciate that you were able to be with us. Can you talk a little bit about Rock and Rap Confidential first, and then we'll talk about the topics of music and revolution, and then also how the current power structure of the record companies might be supplanted. But talk about Rock and Rap Confidential first.
Yeah, well, Rock and Rap Confidential was started about 16 years ago by well-known music writer named Dave Marsh and a number of other music writers around him who felt that, you know, musicians have for a long time been the conscience of our society, and they've been, their music speaks about the issues of homelessness and environmental destruction and, you name it, what the capitalist system is doing to destroy our lives. And right there at the beginning of the Reagan era, there was this unity among this group of music writers to link up the struggles of the people who are just trying to survive and make it in the system or fight the system, and the musicians that were writing about their lives. And and out of that, over the years, Rock and Rap Confidential's goals and its vision has developed a lot through a great deal of experience working with musicians and really finding, these issues have only grown more dire. Musicians are censored like they've never been before. Music in general is under attack like it's never been before. And so Rock and Rap Confidential is a subscription-only newsletter that, has really spread by word of mouth by people who care about seeing that these connections are forged.
Danny, what's really, I think, important to explore a little bit farther, KVMR is one of those rare radio stations that's not programmed by satellite out of New York or Chicago, and a lot of the groups that I think you might be referring to are groups that at least have the opportunity to be played on radio stations like KVMR. When you're talking about musicians and music being censored more than ever, can you talk a little bit about why you say that, and also why that's happening?
Well, it happens, it happens from the top of the industry down. I think, there are artists, there's always sort of a certain token freedom of speech. There's certain artists that get through, there's certain artists that, the music industry, knows it can make enough money off of that, it promotes in one way or another. But the industry, the major record companies all have censorship boards that decide what's going to be released largely based on content, and so that starts at the very top and it goes all the way down through the system. But really, most musicians in America have no opportunity to be heard except for the opportunities that they make, and the industry is increasingly shoving more and more musicians off of their payroll or out of their system at the same time. I think why it's happening, we had an industry that for, the whole music industry grew up around exploiting the sort of the boom economy after World War II and this whole teen market that that music represented, and it exploded there for a decade or so. But for what we've seen, two decades really, and built the concert industry and everything that we think of as the music industry today. But what we've seen, really starting in the mid '80s, but it's become particularly vicious in the '90s, is the fact that the industry itself recognizes that music and musicians, music itself, not only in the ideas it expresses, but in the need to express itself, is in direct conflict with the industry making as much money as it can possibly make. There was an article in LA Weekly not long ago where an anonymous record executive said, you know, the minute musicians and fans wake up, they'll realize we don't even need to exist. So, you know, musicians are able to market their music. They have the technologies to market their music to people very directly, and promote their music better than the industry does it at this point for 99% of the people out there. And, you know, the only thing that's really, that's, you know, the music industry is pitted in a position where it's actually at war with the musicians and the fans themselves in order to maintain control of these enormous profits.
We're talking with Danny Alexander, associate editor of Rock and Rap Confidential. Danny, when you're talking, several thoughts come to my mind. One of them being that when you have an industry which is becoming increasingly corporatized, and mergers are happening, and bigger corporations control more and more of all media. I mean, as I understand it, and I may be wrong, but the last time I heard any kind of a statement, it was something along the lines of six major record companies control 96% of the music that is available to the public. I mean, does that seem like a reasonable figure to you?
Yeah, it's probably even conservative, yeah.
Which is a scary thought.
Yeah.
The other part is that, you know, those big corporations, which very often, you know, maybe perhaps the music division is just a part of a bigger parent company.
Right.
They don't...
Seagram's or something. Yeah.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah, they don't want, you know, big hope, you know, high-profile musicians. For example, let's say Seagram's, you know, just doesn't want, you know, some big high-profile musician or group, you know, saying, don't drink whiskey, it's really bad for you, or something like
right.
that, right?
Right.
I mean, that's kind of part of what you're saying, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, you know, you see them reaching down, to the extent that they are reaching down to bands at a local level, it's to promote beer and cigarettes and you know, I mean, there's a lot of that kind of
product placement is what I refer to as.
Yeah. I mean, that's the only way you see these companies actually sort of reaching down for musicians at the bar band level.
It's a really, really interesting thing, because that certainly everything starts getting put in the context of, you know, how does this affect the bigger corporation as a whole, and how can one division of the corporation support the business interests of another division of the corporation. The other thing that I heard, and perhaps you can speak to this, Danny, because I really don't understand the details of it, but I understand that the FCC has really, on some level, tacitly allowed the reinstitution of payola. I mean, something regarding a deal with Cumulus Company. Can you speak to that at all?
Well, I don't know how useful I'll be speaking to the specifics of that.
Sure, just in general.
I know, you know, it's very important to the industry to to price music out of the hands of most musicians, you know, and to be able to control and push those. I mean, we see a lot of that, to be able to push those artists, a very limited number of artists. I mean, the whole idea is to manage scarcity, you know, and to have very few artists that you can make a lot of money off of, you know. So that payola is something that at one time, you know, it was something. When we think of payola in the 50s or whatever, it was something that people could sort of, you know, fork over a few dollars and maybe get the record played on the radio. And today we're talking about millions of dollars that are out of reach of, you know, there's no way for musicians to take advantage of that system. It's completely corporately controlled.
Yeah, so the point being, of course, is that if you can't get airplay, and if airplay costs, you know, a lot of money to get, and then you don't have the money, you have to either, in essence, sell your soul to the big corporation that can front the money, or else no airplay, therefore no exposure, therefore no, you know, no music career, or low-paying, high-paying, or any other, is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, musicians, I live in Kansas City, and, you know, every musician I know works for free, really. You know, most of the time they're running at a loss. They've got a day job, and they're staying up at, you know, late at night and going to work fried the next morning because, you know, they're doing what they're doing simply because they have a passion to do that, because no one's going to pay them. And that's really exploited all through the industry, you know. I mean, there's a mentality, there's a mentality with musicians, I think, that we have to overcome, which is that, I mean, at the same time, you have to work the system to the extent that you have to survive, but you're not going to survive based on the system, and musicians need to stand up as a group. For themselves against this industry.
It's a really interesting thing because as you're speaking, the thought comes to my mind, I think in terms on some level, perhaps a bad analogy, but nevertheless an analogy, of the basketball strike or the baseball strike, in the fact that the owners, in many cases, though certainly when we're talking about professional sports, the athletes are making tremendous amounts of money as
sure.
well. But the principle, I think, is the same.
Right.
It's the musician, it's the athlete that provides the product. You know, without the product, without the musician, there is no music industry. I mean, it's just that simple. Unless we all want to sit around and watch a bunch of old fat ball guys, you know, trying to sing or something like that, because without the talent, there is no product. And what I'm hearing you say, or at least what I think I'm hearing you say, is that the mentality has gotten sort of turned around, whereby the musicians are put in a position of believing that they need the corporations in order to do their music, but in reality the corporations need the musicians in order to have a music industry. I mean, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, I think they know it and they don't, you know. Musicians know that the industry is not working for them, but at the same time, a friend of mine is a LA musician, said recently, and it really stuck with me, that, you know, the only difference in a musician and anybody else living in poverty in this country, you know, the most conservative estimates are, say, 32 million, right, people living in poverty. The only difference in a musician and the other people living in poverty in this society is a musician gets up every morning because they think that there's a big break, you know? They think that they're going to get that shot, you know? It's one of the things that motivates them. And, you know, for 99.9% of the people out there, that's just not true. But it's one of the things that gets you through the day.
This is Full Logic Reverse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. Stay tuned for contact and ordering information at the end of the program. We're talking with Danny Alexander, Associate Editor of Rock and Rap Confidential. Danny, one of the things that I was thinking about is we're talking about, you know, the marketing of music. And I happened at one point to be speaking with Tupac Shakur's father, and we were talking about rap music. And at that time, we were talking about, it seems that the music industry, quote unquote, is really, or was at that time, and I believe still is, really invested in allowing really kind of violent, at times hateful, homophobic, sexist, racist music to be produced, and they support that type of music quite freely. And yet other rap groups or other music groups that are just as good musically, if not better, who may be putting out a different message, a more political one or something like that, they don't get anywhere near the type of support. And at the same time, of course, we have all of these social ills, and they want to blame these groups, but they very rarely want to assign responsibility to the people who really control the purse strings. I mean, do you see it that way?
Well, you might have to repeat the last part of that, because I'm thinking about the initial thought, you know, the initial point there, which is, you know, this is one thing that's really been used to divide the music community, and particularly the most politically potent genre of music, which is all of that has grown up around hip hop over the last, you know,
right,
20 years. And although there's real issues there, and there's certainly artists that are promoted at the expense of others who have more of a certain kind of political message. But I think more than anything, that debate tends to pit musicians against musicians.
Right. I think I understand what you're saying. It's sort of a classic thing on the left. We're all criticizing each other for not being perfect.
Right.
Yeah, something like that.
Right. And you find ground level, you know, that while, you know, like here in Kansas City, while you have musicians that have very purist hip hop ideals and are, you know, and find themselves on one side of that line, and you also have much more, you know, of the gangsta musicians, the people who tend to be on that sort of the line, in one way or another, in taste and the music they make or whatever,
right,
that when it comes right down to it, they're all working together here to get heard, to, you know, to express themselves, and they just, you know, they interpret what they're doing differently, you know.
And I guess my point is that bringing that issue to the next level, it is neither the quote unquote gangster rappers or the whatever we want to call this other venue of hip hop, if we will, but it is really the corporate executives that can still continue to control that which is heard, and for whatever their reasons are,
right,
they seem to choose this other genre of music over the other. And I guess that's really my point. The finger never gets pointed at them; it gets pointed at the artist all the time, but not at the corporate executives who really make the decisions.
Well, and they choose a handful of people. You
right.
know, I mean, whatever choices they're making, they're choosing two artists versus, you know, 2 million,
right,
who you know, for one reason or another, that they're willing to promote, you know. I think bottom line, whatever the message is, whether it's Garth Brooks or or whether it's you know, Tupac Shakur or whoever, you know, whatever the message is, the bottom line is, how much money can they make off of this?
Right. That's what it always boils down to in the end for them. We're talking with Danny Alexander, Associate Editor of Rock and Rap Confidential. Danny, one of the things that's really interesting and exciting is with the whole advent of computers and the way all of that industry is going and the tools that are being created, there is now, as you began to touch on earlier, the real possibility of cutting these corporations out of the deal, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Talk about that, if you will.
Well, there's hardly any reason for them to exist. They have to manufacture reasons to exist. In fact, I've heard music industry executives on the radio recently complaining about the quality of MP3, which is a way of downloading music, compressed music, at a very high quality off of the internet, and a lot of bands are taking advantage of this. It's amazing to me how quickly a lot of bands, like in my area, have started just putting their music out there because it's the best way they know to promote themselves, and people just take it for free. You know, the industry complains about the quality, which is ridiculous. If anyone who's listened to the music and, you know, has been exposed to it, will tell you differently. But they also, you know, they also talk about, you know, the musicians being ripped off by this process.
Now, all of a sudden, they're concerned, right?
Yeah, right. And you know, and as you know, Chuck D recently, you know, right? I mean, he's been pretty vocal about it, you know, putting Public Enemy's music out on the net, and you know, said, well, you know, we. And this is really generous, I think, to think he gets 12 cents on a dollar or something for a CD if he puts it through the record company.
Right.
You know, really, they can direct market that way if they want. But I think more than anything, you know, most musicians are just not going to be heard unless they do something like this.
Right.
And they're perfectly willing to just give it up for free just for the sake of building an audience and having more people come to hear them, you know, when they play their town. Or whatever.
Yeah,
and we're not going to be promoted.
Right, and certainly, I mean, what we have is that if, as, you know, these type of technologies proliferate throughout, you know, our country and the world, that the opportunities are going to be there for, whether it be, you know, musicians or, you know, spoken word artists or any number of people to be able to utilize the internet and the MP3 format, and I'm sure they'll come up with something even better than that, though MPEG is pretty gosh darn good.
Right.
You know, that people will really be able to utilize this technology to open up the public space for musicians and artists of all types.
Yeah, you know, I write for a local website. That, of course, you know, a local website means it's national, right?
Right.
But it's a local international. But it's, you know, everybody puts their energy into that for free, basically, because, you know, A, this stuff isn't going to be promoted any other way, and everyone, you know, I don't know what the B is, except that just everyone involved in it loves music and cares about it and wants it to be heard. And, you know, so we have, from, you know, on the level of promotions, on the level of even, you know, booking shows and trading resources and trading knowledge. There's a bulletin board, for instance, on the website where bands talk to each other about, you know, how to work around this problem or that problem or whatever. Sometimes most of the time they just use it just to sound off their frustration. But, you know, there's really all the elements there, between the direct distribution of the music to the promotion. There's all the elements for doing this without the industry at all.
Danny, let me ask you, because we only have a few minutes left, I'd like you, if you would, to give whatever contact information you can for Rock and Rap Confidential and or websites, and then also if you have a final thought for our audience this afternoon.
Well, Rock and Rap Confidential can be reached online at www.rockrap.com. And I also have regular mail address that's not in front of me. So I'll have to stall for that.
Well, I know how those things go. I'll help you stall for that. And let me remind the listeners that we are talking with Danny Alexander, Associate Editor of Rock and Rap Confidential. Danny's in the process of getting contact information for Rock and Rap Confidential together. Go ahead, Danny.
Yeah, it's Rock and Rap Confidential, box 341305, Los Angeles, California, 90034, and the phone number is 310-398-4477.
Can you give the phone number one more time?
Yeah, it's 310-398-4477.
And a final thought for our audience.
Yeah, I think fundamentally, in order for us to really overturn this music industry, we have to think about the unity that exists between musicians and everyone else who's being left out of the system right now. And, you know, minimally we're talking about tens of millions of people in America. Worldwide we're talking about half of the world's population that has no stake in the system. And you know, the more that we can build a unity of vision amongst musicians that really, that, you know, you don't want to rob people of their dream, but that system's not going to work for them. And when they see that really what they need, what we all need to do is work together to, you know, our numbers outnumber the handful of people that are controlling these corporate purse strings, and it's really nothing for us to overturn the system if we can only have the vision to strategize and organize to do that.
Danny Alexander, Associate Editor of Rock and Rap Confidential, thank you for joining us on the program to help provide a little piece of that vision today.
Thank you very much.
That's it for this edition of the program. I'm your host, Mike Thornton. If you're interested in copies of this or other Full Logic Reverse programs, you can contact us via email at flr@jps.net or by telephone at area code 530-265-9462. Full Logic Reverse is produced at FLR Studios in Nevada City, California, USA. Our music is by Rick Payne. We hope you'll join us next time for another edition of Full Logic Reverse.